very warm welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you will enjoy this podcast.
Hi, Nitin. Thank you so much for joining us on Blitz Business. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Ashish, for hosting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Let's get started. So, Nitin, let's get to know a little bit about yourself. So, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, I started off my journey with Hindustan Unilever. And from there on, I moved into retail. And Arvind was, my first company into retail. And I was with Arvind for about 8 odd years. And then I moved along with my CEO at that point of time to Reliance Brands. So it was me, two of my other colleagues, and our CEO, and four of us set up Reliance Brands for Reliance. And then at some point of time, I had the entrepreneurial bug. I jumped into studying up Ace Turtle. So Ace Turtle was essentially set up. The company was registered in 2013. But I think by the time we had our exits, et cetera, and everything, we essentially started towards the fag end in 2013. And 2014 is when we actually went live. So that's been, my journey.
Wow. And I was going through a profile through in and out full retail experience with all the top brands. So what made you this entrepreneur bug? Like, what made you like switch to from corporate?
So in my last corporate role, I saw there were, few challenges which inherently our country had, right? So we had a challenge on infrastructure. Okay. Especially around, retail real estate. We didn't have enough retail real estate to accommodate the brands. And to access those retail points itself, with our traffic and no parking, no support infrastructure was becoming, very, very challenging. And so that's the result, you would find at that point of time, all the brands bought 10 years back now, all the brands were kind of getting, was hitting certain threshold which were becoming like sort of a glass ceiling for them. They're not able to grow beyond it. And then I do remember at that point of time, e-commerce was having its second avatar, if I might use that word. We had Flipkart, which was getting into certain categories, and then we had Myntra, which was getting into fashion. And I remember there used to be another portal called Big Shoe Bazaar, and the Smile Group also had Fashion in You. So these were, again, I would say a second entry, but a far more impactful entry was happening of e-commerce again into India. And the Myntra team met me, for taking some of our brands. And I remember asking the Myntra team that, what is your average selling price? And they told me that, their average selling price at that point of time was 600 rupees. And the brand they wanted from us, the starting price point was 6,200 rupees. So my question to them was that how will this work? Because you're really far off from where we are. But they were pretty confident that let's do it. And one of the colleagues who worked with us in Arvind had joined them as the chief operating officer. So he had known what we had done during Arvind with Department of Store Business. So he gave a very good analogy, which stuck to me, saying that, in the department of store business, why we succeeded at that point of time when this was all was happening, let's say the modernization of retail, if we can call it, that we control the merchandise and assortment. So it was our inventory, and the platform was offered by the department of stores, and we would provide the brand aesthetics, which is the brand environment, whether in terms of fixtures, in terms of visual merchandising, so on and so forth. And the traffic was the responsibility of, the platform, which is the department of store in this case. So the same analogy he gave me that, okay, why don't we treat this as the same way? And which ring a bell or two with me and said, okay, let's start this. And we started that brand. And that brand incidentally was Timberland. And in the first month itself, we saw orders coming in from cities like Guwahati and Jamshedpur, which were not even in a 10-year plan of Timberland. So then that, the realization came on me that there is something here. It's going to take a bit of time. But this is the answer to, the problems of retail infrastructure, the physical retail infrastructure in the country. So this could be an answer to solve both. But we were always a believer that, you know, both online and offline would live together because both of them had their own, I would say, the positives and the negatives.
True.
And one of the roles I was also doing at my previous corporate jobs was that I was also leading the international business development, which essentially meant identifying the brands which are relevant for the Indian market, go to those brands and negotiate a long-term contract or a joint venture with them. And when you are discussing a joint venture or long-term contract, they will always share, you always want discussing with the CXOs, and they would always share with me, you know, that what was going on in that market and e-commerce, how it was impacting the market. And I saw some of them were kind of paranoid, some of them were embracing it. But I remember very clearly one of the discussions we were having was with this UK-based retailer, John Lewis, and how they had just about started using, you know, their stores for fulfillment and kind of a connecting both, you know, online and offline. So that really intrigued me. And I went, you know, deeper into that space. Every time I would travel, I would try and meet people in the similar space to try and understand what was kind of going on. And then I spoke to my colleague, Barry, saying this is very interesting and, you know, we should jump into it. But at that point of time, our whole thought was that we will be in the enabling space because we felt that this is what everybody, especially all the retail brands, will jump onto. It's just a matter of time. But we will be in the enabling side, but not on the consumer side. So that's how, you know, Ace Turtle was born as a SaaS platform.
So basically, then as, you know, as the one-liner on your website says, it's an integrated manufacturing marketing in a retail company scaling global brands in India. So in sort of like in one line, if you can explain, like, what are you doing for a brand? How sort of they are able to leverage?
So it might take a few, you know, more than a line. So what I will do is I'll continue where I left off.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is, so you know, when we started this as a SaaS company, we were the first ones in the market. So I think after the first couple of years, you know, things started moving well and we became the market leaders in the enterprise space. So we were focused on the enterprise space. So we very quickly became market leaders and we hit an ARR of about $10 million. And at that point of time, you know, the big event of pandemic happened. And it was a very tough time for us where when you plan your runway, you never plan that, you know, revenue will be zero, right?
Yes.
So that was a situation which became like that, right? Hmm. So with the first lockdown, the revenue became nil. And most of our clients, actually almost all of them, also told us they don't have the ability to pay because they are still trying to figure out what their survival would be. And they were firing people by the droves.
Yes.
So it was a very, very tough time for us. Hmm. But fortunately, after the first lockdown opened up, then things, you know, went in a different direction altogether because all the brands had their inventory stuck in the stores and they wanted an omni-channel platform, etc. They also want to sell online and that's where we were very rightly positioned. So we were able to, you know, quickly onboard quite a few new clients, existing clients for scaling. And then we saw that, you know, why some brands were scaling more than the others. And our submission was largely that the ones who are not scaling, that's largely more internal to them, because they have multiple middlemen in the value chain. Because typically, you know, brands in India would have multiple channels, right? They will be selling through department stores, they will be selling through retail stores, they'll be selling through distributors, and distributors will be selling through those mom and pop MBOs and so on and so forth. And then, of course, you'll also have online. And what we realized was that the great brands, but the way the companies had been operating for decades and decades, it was becoming very difficult for them to, you know, adopt technology because of legacy process and system they had and the middlemen they had. So we thought, why don't we take over some of these brands ourselves? Because we, before starting the SaaS company, we ourselves were in retail. So we knew retail. And of course, thanks to SaaS, we now were also understanding the tech space as well. So we thought that, you know, if we could take over some of these brands, you know, we could transform them and scale them much, much faster.
So by takeover,
we made a list of, yeah.
You mean doing partnership or what do you mean by takeover?
So what we did there was we said, okay, we will take over the long-term licenses of these brands. Just the way, let's say, an Arvind was operating or Nathavilla was operating or let's say, you know, a good example of Page Industries, you know, with Jockey that they were operating. So we said, okay, we'll take a long-term license for these brands, because in India, you need to have local manufacturing because our duty structure is so high. So you can't have the right price for the consumer, nor can you have the right margin for the retailer as well, if you do not produce locally because of the duty structure. Second is, the way we were very clear about a model was that a model will be very circular. And what that meant was, because we always were getting, you know, all the customer data, all the fulfillment data, all the data was coming into our platform. So our platform is called Rubicon. So we were getting all this data on Rubicon. So the whole idea was, we're going to leverage that. So first thing which we said, okay, now, if we have to leverage all this data and we have to use this data both from a consumer side and also from a supply chain and product side, then essentially that means two things. One, we don't need to have these middlemen, because middlemen become gatekeepers. Because even if you are getting some data and you want to influence your, let's say, consumer engagement, or you want to influence your product assortment, then if the gatekeepers don't allow you, you can't do anything. And also that delays adoption. So we said, okay, and we had seen this with the clients on the SaaS platform, because on the SaaS side, we were working with pharma, FMCG, footwear, apparel, eyewear, watches. We were almost into every category. So we understood, you know, where the real problem was. So we said, okay, one, we have to let go of these middlemen. So we shut down all the distributor, you know, channels what they had. So we were focused only on consumer channels, so that, you know, everything is connected to the platform. All this consumer data which comes to us, we feed it back into our supply chain as well. It also influences our product assortment. So that was a very, very, important piece as well. So that's how, you know, we started off the model with saying, okay, we'll manufacture, design, and all the way to the consumer. So that's how the kind of the model is. Oh, so you produce, you send out to the market. Yeah, so that's, sorry, go ahead.
No, very interesting. So basically, as a company, you started as, you were providing, please correct me if I'm wrong, a SaaS product. Then you realized, you know, after pandemic, ABC thing happened, and then you sort of took over the licenses of the few brands which you mentioned, right?
So a few of our clients. Yeah, a few of our clients. They were all our clients. Yeah.
Ah, they were all of your clients. And then sort of at any point in time, Nitin, was there any idea to float your own brand?
No. And there's a reason for it, right? Okay. So why we didn't decide to do that? And that's the question, incidentally, the board also asked when he went to the board. So the reason for that was that...
It's not a board meeting. Okay.
I know, it's not a board meeting, thankfully. So you know, it was very simple, right? Because we were in this space, you know, before the pandemic for about, whatever, 6-7 years, right? So it was very, very clear to us that, you know, after, you know, the COGS, right, the biggest cost which you have in the unit, you know, metrics, if you look at the unit economics of the business, is the CAC, right? And if you're building your own brand, it takes, you know, a lot more money because your CACs are high. The profitability, to achieve the profitability, becomes very, very difficult. At the same time, since if you're launching a new brand, you will always have a challenge of minimums, because good factories will always have minimum ordering quantities. And good products you can get from good factories. And so if you go to, you know, a good factory and say, I'm going to make, you know, X amount, they will not work with you. So you will not get the right quality. You will not be working with the compliant factories, which are socially compliant, environmentally compliant, and so on. So our thought process was very clear that, you know, we are not in the business of building brands, but we are in the business of growth. So we'll grow these brands. So that was the whole, thesis of our model. And that's the reason why today our CAC is about $1.2.
Oh, wow. Unheard number. So with all these...
These brands are all low.
Correct. That's the difference. Correct. So do you believe in the all these D2C stories and all these brands which scaled? And as you mentioned rightly, right, the CAG is tremendously high. All these D2C startups in this space.
See, I think definitely, you know, D2C has a role to play. Or instead of D2C, because now people are trying D2C like us as well. But largely, let's say the new age brands, let's call them, right? These new age brands definitely have a role to play in the ecosystem, because they identify a niche and they expand upon it. So, but when it comes to profitability, I think there'll always be a challenge. And that's the reason why you will not find any pure D2C brand globally, which is also profitable. So that's the global challenge, unfortunately, because of the same reasons we discussed earlier. You know, the the CACs are lower, you're not able to offer value of the product because you'll not be able to offer a good quality product, and so on and so forth. So I think they definitely have a role to play, but I feel consolidation is going to happen at some point of time. There'll be fewer players where this amalgamation might happen, and maybe, you know, that will lead into something better. But I see profitability will continue to be a challenge.
Wow, very interesting. And then sort of by taking licenses, so what's your then the revenue model kicks in? So it's a percentage of all the sales, or how does it work?
No, because now we are the brand in India, right? So the first brand we took over, first brand were Lee and Wrangler, who are, like I mentioned, were our clients as well, right? So we took over that business. And so we now essentially, we do our own manufacturing, design, and we sell and all the to the consumer. And we make, you know, a gross margin out of what we sell. So that's a very clear model.
Okay.
And what we pay to the brand owners, which is this company in US called Contour. Okay. It's a listed company. We pay them a royalty on whatever we sell.
Understood. And the rest of the aspect, like the franchisee model, is that also intact in place, or it's not?
Yeah. So we made some changes, as I mentioned, to the offline distribution specifically. We got rid of all the wholesale channels. Because of the same reason, we didn't want gatekeepers, we didn't want any channel which where we will not get the consumer data directly. So we got rid of all those channels. And today we sell, of course, online, but we're out of the wheelhouse. So we sell online through marketplaces and the web stores of these brands. Plus we have department stores and we have retail stores. So that's the, you know, distribution network. And all this is connected through our platform, Rubicon.
Oh, wow. And then coming to this aspect, Ace Turtle. So what's the story behind the name of the company?
I wish there was a very interesting story. But the real story is that, you know, we've been looking for a lot of names. And whatever names we wanted to pick up was always registered. Right?
Oh, so, couldn't find the domain.
Couldn't find the domain. So, you know, there were two things which were very clear, right, when we were looking for the name. One was that we wanted the name to start with A, because we wanted to be, you know, on the alphabetical order, we wanted to be with A. If so, wherever it comes, it will come as A, right? Second thing was that we wanted the name to be very different, or name not define what we do. Not because we imagined that, or we folk, or let's say we thought that there'll be a pivot later on or something, but we thought this could, it has to be agnostic of business what we do, so that we can, extend into, you know, multiple streams. And to be honest, it's not an original idea, because both these things is what Amazon did. We just picked up from them.
Well, still an interesting story, I'll say. sort of moving on, Nitin. So in this business, then what is your sort of biggest challenges you have faced, or how the sort of the landscape have shifted now?
Yeah, so let me pick up second question first. Okay. See how the landscape shifted was that when we started off this business, you know, that time the whole idea was we will have a SaaS business, and on the other side, we will have this license business, which we called Captive Brands, because these were long-term licenses. And the whole idea was they'll be captive to our overall platform. So that was the whole idea initially. But in the first 6 months, we realized that we were doing about 4.5, 5, actually it was more than, I think, 5.5x of our business plan. So it became very clear that, you know, the whole game here, which was driving it fast, was adoption, and this database platform was working very, very well. So we said, okay, then if that's where growth is coming, and secondly, what we also needed now to solve for some new problem which we're facing. Because there was manufacturing which we were doing, there was design we were doing, and we didn't have tech for these two things. And then we had taken over the retail stores where we were running the stores, and the retail stores were a black box again. So how to, let's say, decipher the black box or crack the black box as well. So we needed to, you know, build newer products, newer tech. So we needed to focus our entire tech bandwidth on solving some of these new problems as well. So then we decided to let go of our SaaS clients. So September of 22 is when we started to exit the SaaS business. Our target was that we will complete by, September this year. But I suspect by January, we'll be able to get out of that completely. But as of now, we almost got out of that. Some few clients were left with us because they've been with us for a long time, and we're deeply integrated into the system, so we understand that they need more time. So I think January will be completely out of the SaaS business. So the entire business is now this whole licensed brand business, which is powered through a tech. So that's the whole model now.
So
that's,
So how does the let go of business work? You have handed over to someone else or?
No, we didn't hand over. We thought about it, but we realized that itself will take a whole lot of bandwidth. So we gave notice periods. That's why, you know, we touched a long period for exit. We gave notice periods, whatever people wanted, mutually agreed. In some cases, we kept extending also. In fact, in some cases, we were also involved in evaluating new vendors for them. So we didn't sell to somebody. We let go of that business, and they found new vendors to take care of them.
So how many customers we are talking in this?
I think we had about 70 plus enterprise customers.
Oh, wow.
They were literally everything. Luxottica, you think of a brand in India across categories, so you'll find everybody. P&G, Fossil.
But isn't it tempting, you know, to think, to hand over to or maybe create a subsidiary? No, you were very clear.
See, yeah, because I think the difference I'll tell you was because we were able to hit a 40 million ARR, right, in this business in less than a year. And it has taken us, 8 years to, almost get to or 7.5 years to get to a 10 million ARR, right? So, of course, the gross margins are different, but the scale is also very different. Right. So it was very clear that this can grow much faster as compared to this. And also, I think the question of what was most important was that we knew we couldn't straddle on both the boats. We needed to take a call. And the call was where, the growth was and where the scale was. So, and I couldn't get a visibility, to be honest, that over the next 2 years, will this 10 million on SaaS will become 20 million? Because we'd already faced post the pandemic where the business from existing clients had increased. They had come back and renegotiated all the, commercials, et cetera. So I knew in India, because we focus only on India, this challenge will always happen where clients will always renegotiate, the price, et cetera. My understanding was if you are in the enterprise space, then if you're building for the world out of India, then that's a great business model. But if you are building in India for India, I think this margin pressure will always be there. So I think it was very, very clear that we need to move on the other side.
Wow, that is true. That is true. More features.
Same price or marginal price. All that.
Yes. Then do you also, Nitin, drive some synergies between these brands since you have visibility across the spectrum? Do you have?
See, the back end is all common. So the back end is all common, right? So our tech is common. Our the finance structure, the HR structure is all common. Only the front end is, the business teams are different. So how the front end, so when I say the front end, there are two parts of the front end. One is the business team, which includes, marketing, the management of the business and the design. That's the front end for us because in the company, we don't even have a sales team and we don't have a sales team because we don't sell to anybody, right?
True.
So there are small teams, which are the front end teams for each of the brands, and they're dedicated to each of the brands. And the back end, everything is all common.
So let's talk about a little bit about licensing. So how does typical such deals sort of work? For example, is it like a renting agreement type? You have to pay your rent every month or quarter, whatever it is, or it is a
No, so these are all, long-term deals, right? So there are, so you divide, let's say if it's a 25-year contract, you will divide 25-year contract, maybe, in 10, 10, 5 or 7, 7, 7, whatever, right? Okay. So into these blocks. And you will, commit to a minimum that how much business you will do in these blocks, right? So, and based on that, you give a royalty to them annually. And of course, each year you will forecast and you'll have a growth plan for each of these. So that's how largely the model works. And that's not just us, that's the same way, let's say, Arvind or Aditya Birla or Page Industries is also doing. So, or Jubilant is doing, everybody's doing the same.
Understood. And typically, what is the range of to acquire such brand? I assume there is a one-time licensing fee you have to pay, which is...
No, we don't pay. We don't pay any one time. We, okay. See, the first one is always a tough one to get. But when you have shown, the success, then the next one's your negotiation power increases, especially in today's, geopolitical environment where India is a shining star as compared to the rest of the world. So we don't do any upfront payments. We only pay, annually.
Oh, wow. So this, does it then means for the company Ace Turtle, you, because since the backend is same, etc., you can then onboard more brands? Are you looking to onboard more?
Yeah, we have. So, we just launched Toys R Us, now we are about to launch Dockers in next calendar year, in the first quarter of next calendar year. And we are also going to make announcement for two more new brands.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Then moving on, Nitin, let's talk about a little bit about the funding piece. Very interesting topic.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting when you get it.
Yes. Oh, yes. So has Ace Turtle, yes, Ace Turtle has raised Series B. So how the funding journey has been for you? I mean, you come from the background, right? I'm assuming VCs were ready to give you checks out when you started. Share us the experience, when you started this.
So I think we have raised, I think $40 to $45 million of capital throughout right now.
All equity?
Equity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we also raised some debt, right? And we started off with angel funding, and the angel funding came to us from the industry guys, because even the real industry understood what we were trying to do. So they understood the problem which we were trying to address, the initial constraints I spoke to you about of the physical environment.
Mm-hmm. For the SaaS product.
So we got some, for the SaaS product, yeah, for the initial days. We got a Series A from on the SaaS. Series A1 was also on SaaS. And Series B is, when we actually did a larger round, which was based on this newer model. But I think for us, go ahead, please.
No, please go. Go ahead, yeah.
So for us, I think the challenge was also, which I thought will be a challenge, but what didn't turn out to be a challenge was to convince the investors, because they are all invested, in a SaaS company, and we were saying, okay, we are now moving to the consumer side.
Exactly.
But fortunately for us, the first 6 months of the Lead Angler business, gave the proof of the pudding. So I think everybody was convinced on the way forward.
And so for the, let me call it the second inning for your company within, this pivot. So do you have raised any capital for this particular?
So we raised, I think about 30 to 34 million. We raised for this only, about 32 odd million, I think we raised.
Okay. And any further plans?
See, right now we are planning for an IPO, because now as we are moving towards, make the business, so business is already sustainable on its own. So our business does not require any more capital. So we will have a pre-IPO round. That structuring is going on right now for that process. So I think our horizon for IPO is, it will take us at least 2 years for the structuring. Structuring is also because, we have a Singapore structure, India structure, and so on and so forth. At the same time, we also need to clean up the cap table. Some internal process have to be set. So I think in 2 years' time, we're planning to be ready for the IPO. So that's where we're heading. So there'll be a pre-IPO round, but that'll be closer to the IPO.
Okay. So that's the next step you guys have planned.
That's right.
Okay. Understood. And in this sort of, so you mentioned you are raising. So what is the, then Nitin, what's the biggest, coming back to the question previously. So what is the biggest challenge in this business?
I think the challenge in the business is, what we are trying to do is to understand the consumer trends better. Because what's happening is today, the old, let's call it the pre-pandemic era, of saying India and Bharat, I think that dramatically changed. That bridge, got built during the pandemic. So now, whether you say the larger towns, the smaller towns, everyone's consuming the same, content. Also, the tastes and preferences are changing far more rapidly, than they used to do before. Plus, you have a new surge of consumers also coming into that bracket because we are focused on the mid-price, the middle class of India. So there are new middle-class consumers also coming in. I think the challenge is to understand their behavior and have the ability to react to it in time. So I think that's the biggest challenge we're trying to solve right now. So that's what we're working on. In fact, that's the clear company project. It's the work's already started. We've done some releases, but we think by mid next year, we should be in that place to have all the tools we need to not just understand, but also react to it.
So do you, Nitin, as a company commander, take multiplier in valuation or a retail business or somewhere in between here?
See, I would say it's somewhere in between. We're definitely way above the legacy companies, right? And of course, you know, the immediate post-pandemic era of those crazy tech multiples, no, not there. But yeah, so it's somewhere in the middle. But it's obviously way above the traditional retail companies because the model has a lot more operating leverage than those traditional models have.
So what's the difference? Well. So what's the margin difference compared to the traditional versus how you guys are doing?
See, I think is the operating leverage comes in, you know, like I said, because in the other businesses where you have multiple brands, right, you will find that the challenge they have is that they will, every time you launch a new brand, you had to have a large set of people to manage. So just to share with you, when we took over the business of Lee Harry Angler, they had more than 350 people. Right. So we have about less than 40 people managing the entire business.
Oh, right? Wow.
So so that's where, you know, the first leverage comes in. For example, you know, we do not have any people in the field also, even for retail operations. Forget about the sales team, which we don't have. We could retail operation also done through centrally because everything is connected to our systems. The retail operations are done through our app, which we call Connect. We have AI cameras installed inside our stores. We have electronic shelf talkers on the shelf. So when we change the price online, everything changes there at the same time. We look at our planograms through the same technology as well. So it's quite centrally controlled. So I think the operating leverage which our tech brings in, I think that's the biggest difference. Both in terms of, you know, the productivity and also in terms of efficiency. Where I think what we are building now is because manufacturing was new to us. So we're building the manufacturing tech, which is what I meant on reacting to it and also trying to understand. We just deployed an algorithm recently to understand the trends, but I think we're still some time away from you know, getting it where we need it to be. But if we achieve about 75% plus, let's say, predictability, then I would say we would have you know, cracked something. So we feel it will take us another 7 to 8 months to reach there. But that's what we are working on right now. So, because if you look at the entire retail business, right, there are four key elements here. The top, at the top is the consumer. And the second you have is the product. Then you have supply chain, and then you have distribution. And when I say distribution, I mean online, offline, whatever the new channels might be, right? So, so this is how the whole, you know, key elements of this whole retail business is. And what we are doing is we are using tech to solve the problems in each of these and go deeper and deeper. Second side of this is, you know, how we look at our business is because we our business is omnichannel because that's the tech we were giving to the entire industry, right? So we are native to omnichannel. So if you look at, you know, other industry which have to, or other retail companies, for them, you know, if they have to do adoption and do all of those challenges which we saw those clients facing, in our case, it's all ground up. So we don't have those challenges because we're native to that. I think that's a big difference. Third is issue also is when a legacy company needs to solve a problem, they need to look outside for the tech. If some tech is available, sure, and if their products, again, if something is available, whether that fits in or solves fully or partially their entire problem, and then the integration and so on and so forth, which we all know, right, in this business. With us, if we find a problem, we write our own code. That's the big difference is, you know, where we come from. So we don't have a dependency. And so I think these are some of the key elements which we kind of bring into the table. So I would not say we are there where we need to be. It's a journey. We just kind of started, but we scratched 2-3% of, you know, the surface, and the 2-3% itself is giving us this, you know, massive efficiency. Sorry, go ahead.
No. So the idea basically, so two questions which come to my mind. The first is, so you only want to bring global brands to India, or is there any other plan, vice versa, see, to bring Indian brands?
Right now we are looking at brands which are, you know, have a good salience with the Indian customers. So we have, you know, defined some of the parameters for us. One is, we are quite focused on in the India middle class. It's about, what, 430 odd million We expect another three and a half years' time, it should be about 700 million. So that is the fastest growing segment. And also, from a business perspective, it's a very attractive segment. Why? Because, the moment you go above that segment, then your TAM drops dramatically. The moment you go below that segment, which is a value segment, then you need a lot more capital to, invest there, because your unit, economics don't really work. Mm-hmm. Because, the cost of logistics are kind of fixed. Your margins are lower. So you need a lot of scale to build it. And that takes a lot of time in India to build that scale. So I think, we are very clear that all brands which are relevant for middle class is where we will. And as this middle class keep evolving, that's why I mentioned earlier, we're trying to understand this consumer more and more. So we want to evolve with this, middle class itself. So any brands which have a good salience with this, is what we want to do. Well, why salience is important, as I mentioned before, because CACs are important. It keeps our CAC low and also helps us scale faster.
And there is this also, it just came to my mind, there is many companies which has come up like House of Brands, right? They acquire. Is it something you'll categorize into similar category or no? I don't think so.
No, because they are all, trying to do, brands which are not known, trying to build, which are at a very small scale and say, okay, how we can kind of scale them. But again, like I said, the challenges, like we discussed earlier, those challenges remain. So we are not, plus they are very online focused. And in our business, we are not channel focused. We are customer focused. Why we're not channel focused? Because we feel that channels will lose and gain relevance over a period of time. New channels will come, old channels might lose relevance. And the way our whole model is set up, which is on the foundation of our platform, Rubicon, which provides single view of inventory, single view of customer. So for us to add or remove a new channel is hardly any cost, but the resources are all common. It's the same inventory we're using, right? It's the same marketing dollars we're using, because we have a single view of inventory and single view of customer. So these two foundations is what our whole model is based on.
And then if the model is so successful, Nitin, what is stopping your competitors, all those we discussed till now, to not do the same, to tackle all these challenges? Someone who has a brand license, 5, 10, 20, there are many companies who have licenses. So what is stopping them to not jump on?
See, one is the licenses, and the second is, of course, the tech. So let's say they're also able to manage the tech, which people have not been able to do, but let's say they're able to do it, right? But still, the question actually is, everybody knew what Uber was doing. How many have been able to succeed at it? Everybody was knowing what Amazon Flipkart was doing. How many have been able to succeed at it? And if you look at it, every industry, that's you will find disruption always happens from somebody from outside. And for whatever reason, it's happened through tech. And why it's happened through tech? Because I think tech brings that, scalability as well. But largely, I think is the DNA. I think the single biggest factor which differentiate these companies we spoke about versus if you look at their competition at that point of time, because Amazon was again fighting the traditional retailers. You had Uber was fighting your Hertz, Avis, and those car rental companies. And, and a similar case with us, right? So we are in the midst of large corporates, which are those traditional legacy companies. But again, the difference from is that we have an outside view, and we are starting ground fresh. I think the DNA makes us very, very different. We see a problem. I think just see the example of the brands we took over, right? So what we have done now with these two brands, Lee and Wrangler, which had gone live first, we're already doing much more than they've done the last 25 years in this country.
Oh, wow.
Same brands, same geography, India, and same tech. They were using our tech only. So that DNA is very, very important. And I think that becomes the culture of the company. I think that's the big difference.
So do you use clothes from all these brands? Do you have any Lee Wrangler?
I have loads of them.
And apart from work, which keeps you quite busy, Nitin, so what do you do apart from work to keep yourself in sports or anything else interest you?
Actually, for me, work doesn't seem like work, right? And I think that's what we also try and do in the company as well. That can we build an environment which doesn't feel like work? So I think that's a big part of who we are. So I 5 days we have office. 6 days Saturday is my networking day, because meeting which are not directly related to my business, I set them aside for Saturday. So Saturday from 12 noon up to dinner is I'm meeting different people, and Sunday is for me. So Saturday night to Sunday is mine. So I love music. So if there are some concerts happening or something happening, I do that. Otherwise, Sunday, you know, is I'm with friends and family.
And what was the most fun part in terms of in your corporate, or you're having more fun in startup? I don't know if I can call you startup.
No, but I think the startup is, we will always be a startup. And I think startup is more fun, undoubtedly. There is no comparison. The impact you can have, and not just from a founder perspective, even each team member, because we've got, mix of people. There are people who've always worked in startups, the younger folks, and we also got people from the corporate side, both from tech as well as retail industries. And we see that, and they themselves see the impact they're able to make, in an organization like ours versus, you can do in a corporate. So I think, and also, I think, like I mentioned, the DNA, right? Mm-hmm. We always do in a quarter some 7 to 8 new things, and only 2 to 3 succeed, mm-hmm. right? In fact, 2 to 3 succeed, then we have a fantastic quarter, right? So, and that you can never do in a corporate, right? So that ability to do fast, to decide, you decide in a meeting, okay, let's action it out. Those things don't happen. And I think, I love it. And I hope we are able to keep this, culture intact, even post the IPO.
And okay, let me rephrase. So which was the favorite company you enjoyed working in your corporate?
In my corporate? Okay. So corporate world, I would say Arvind was my favorite.
Okay.
Because I think the seeds of entrepreneurship was sown by that company. Because that company gave us a lot of freedom to do what we wanted to do, which I worked in about 4 or 5 companies. I didn't see any other company give that entrepreneurial freedom to its employees.
I think that's one consistent thing I've heard. I met many people from Arvind and they always praise.
Is it?
Yes. You might be the third or fourth person I'm hearing. Yes. So that's good to know. Well, thanks a ton, Nitin, for your time and very fascinating, discussion of how you started your journey, the pivot and what you're building and the numbers you're able to achieve. Anything you want to share from your side, which I may have missed?
No, I think what I would just say people who might be listening to this is that if anybody who's in the startup world or who's thinking of getting into a startup, you can reach out to me. I'm available on LinkedIn. You can ping me. I'm always there, to bounce off any thoughts or ideas you might have, any help you might need. Of course, I'll be only available on Saturday because Monday to Friday is meant for Easter. But I'll be available on the Saturday if you want to discuss. So just ping me. We can always fix up and meet up. And I can do whatever I can from my side.
Perfect. Awesome. Thanks a ton, Nitin, for your time. It was really fun having this discussion.
Thank you, Ashish. This was lovely. Thanks a lot for having me here.